everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show that is committed to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, it's just wonderful having you join me for these in-depth conversations. I really love the opportunity to get into a topic in much more depth and allow us to have a kind of conversation that allows all of us, myself included, to learn a whole lot more about the things that are really important for us. So today we have another really important conversation, as always. And before I move in that direction, I just want to be sure to welcome anyone who may be listening for the first time. Welcome to What Women Must Know. I invite you to go to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com, and also that's my Facebook page, and either like me there or opt into my newsletter from my website, because I will send you all the archive shows every week, and that ensures you will never miss one of the episodes. And also, I send out regular email blogs. I have great information from my newsletter. I post things on a daily basis that I think are really important for people to know about. So it's a way of staying tapped in, educated, and learning what's really going on, kind of, you know, sifting through all the information, and I like to say lifting the veil to see what the truth is. There's a lot of information that we are being exposed to that really isn't accurate, and that's particularly true when it comes to our health and well-being. And to just kind of continue with this conversation about information we're not getting the truth about is the topic that we're going to be exploring today. So today we're having a conversation with the director, Sabine El Jemayel, who has written and directed a fantastic new documentary called Generation Zapped. And I was so excited when I first found out about this documentary, and I immediately looked at the trailer and I was able to watch more of the documentary, and this just resonated so deeply with me, because if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that this is one of the topics that I'm very passionate about, the dangers about our wireless world. And it's a topic that I have been researching and lecturing about and writing about and interviewing lots of people about for, oh, probably more than 15 years before it was even recognized as a problem. So this is a great opportunity for me to introduce you to someone who's very passionate about this subject and has created a fantastic educational and enlightening documentary, which I recommend every single person watch. I can't recommend it highly enough. So let me just tell you about Sabine. She was born in Iran and also lived in Lebanon, and then she moved to Canada, and in 1987 she received, well, I don't know if it was in 1987, but she received a BA in Communication Studies from Montreal's Concordia University, up in 1993. Sorry, got ahead of myself there. And Sabine wrote and directed three short 16-millimeter films before moving to L.A. in 1994. Since then, she has edited a number of feature films, such as the award-winning Palestinian feature film, The Olive Harvest. Currently, Sabine has two compelling, socially engaged screenplays ready for production and another feature documentary in development. As a mother, Sabine is on a mission to expose the truth about the effects of cell phone radiation and wireless technologies on children's health. And currently, Sabine has directed the documentary Generation Zapped. And just a little bit about this documentary. Generation Zapped is an eye-opening documentary which reveals that wireless technology poses serious health risks from infertility to cancer. Through interviews with experts in science and public health, along with people who suffer from high sensitivity to wireless radiation, the film suggests ways to reduce your exposure and protect your family. It's a really, really important documentary information that everyone must know about for the health of our generation and generations to come. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Sabine El Jemayel to the show. So hello, Sabine.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for the great work you're doing. I can only imagine what it's like to direct. Did you write this script for this documentary as well, or help put it
together?
You
know, you start with documentaries. This is my first documentary. I directed a fiction narrative film, feature film before that. And in documentary, you write, and eventually the movie takes a shape of its own because of the people you interview, and as you interview more experts, I discovered more things, and so it's really an organic process. You start with one idea and you finish with another one. Originally, it was supposed to be a documentary only on Wi-Fi in schools, but then I realized that I needed to really bring the whole issue of overexposure before leading the audience into Wi-Fi in schools. So it takes a different shape.
It evolved. I mean, I was going to say it just seems so overwhelming to me to actually put something like that together. I hope you must have ways to manage your stress levels when you're putting a documentary or a movie together, because it's like so many moving parts, right, that have to come together to make.
Yes, I actually am a mindfulness educator, so I do meditation, and I think that's been my savior in being able to manage the film, a job, because there's a sustainability issue with documentaries. It takes so long that you sometimes have to put it aside, get to reality, then back to the documentary. And I have three children, so I think meditation has been what has enabled me to switch gears when I needed to.
Well, that's a great endorsement for mindfulness meditation, which I also do, and I couldn't function without it. So it really is such a wonderful resource to help us in all areas of our life, and especially when you're a busy mother filmmaker. So, the first thing I'm curious about, Sabine, is, how did you get into the world of filmmaking, and what brought you here to the U.S. after living in Iran and Middle East and then Canada, but what really fueled your passions there?
It's interesting. Filmmaking, simply filmmaking. I having lived in different parts of the world under different circumstances and political conditions, I would say, and the war in Lebanon and the revolution in Iran, I felt compelled to tell stories. I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker since I was like 14. And so I went to, I did a cinema school, actually communication, and I specialized in filmmaking at a very young age. And I had a very strange circumstance on a set that someone actually passed on the set, and that was very traumatizing. And so I was like, oh, you know what, I don't want to be in production anymore. I don't want to be on action films where there are explosions. I actually lived that for real in Lebanon. I don't need to live it again on set. And so I guess locked myself in the cutting room, and I love the process of editing and being an editor, because you really tell the story with images. It doesn't matter what you wrote. It doesn't matter if what the director shot is expensive and helicopters and good looking. With the images, it works or it doesn't work. You don't have the emotional baggage of how it was shot, how expensive it was, how great it was, And I love that. It's a very difficult process, because, and especially in documentaries, honestly, I don't think I would have been able to pull off this documentary if I wasn't an editor at heart. I had two fantastic editors work on the film, on the documentary, because I was shooting at the same time and raising funds and doing crowdfunding, so I couldn't be on all fronts, and I wanted someone to sort through the material because I was too close to it, and that was the best thing I've done. They were both excellent at different stage of the project. But having that background made me comfortable in selecting the essential, because I have about 40 hours of footage brought down to 74 minutes. I mean, you've got to be selective when you have that much material.
You'd have to be good at editing, because You know, yeah, it just amazes me that you can do that and be so focused, and you have to stay on message with what you want and know how to weave it all together so it's coherent and get all the points across. I mean, I write, and, you know, I find it hard enough to do that just writing, but when you're putting it into a film, it amazes me. So I have great respect for what you're doing, Sabine, and for what a great job you did. And I just want to say, when people watch this, and I know everyone's going to want to watch this, you know, you had some great interviews. Some of the people I actually know, some I've interviewed, some I've studied with, actually. And
who's that?
Like George Carlo. George Carlo.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, I studied with him and was certified from him in a program that he did many years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was fun to see him again. I haven't seen him for a while. And
main thread of the film. Like, he really is the conductive thought throughout. Like he's weaving all the interview into a structure. He's been amazing.
Yeah, and we can talk a little bit as we get into the documentary and everything that's involved in it. But, yes, he's been there from the very beginning, and he's an insider, so he would know a lot. And I was going to say, the other thing I love about the film, so you made it so it's easy to understand and watchable because you've also put the animation in. And I know you have animators working on that documentary with you. So it's like all these different dimensions of telling a story that make it so easily understood.
Well, I have to say, this subject, that was the most difficult part. It's a very dry subject matter. I mean, who wants to know that their cell phone is causing them harm, and who wants to know that the iPad that you're giving a two-year-old is actually a weapon that you're putting in their hands? You know, that's very harmful to their little bodies and the blood-brain barrier. And I am not a scientific person at all. I'm more of an artist, so putting my head around all the science involved in this issue was very challenging for me. And I started doing the research. I really wanted to understand more about what was supposed to be harmful from the research I had started doing. And the more I was researching it, the more information I got, the more I would talk to people, the more they were like, oh, what are you talking about? That can't be, you know. And so I had to understand the science, and that was the most difficult part in the film, was to resist explaining the science. I mean, the first cut was 2.5 hours, and we were explaining the VGCCs discovered by Dr. Martin Paul, which was a voltage-gated calcium channel that's a very important biological mechanism that's affected by exposure to electromagnetic fields and radio frequencies. Same thing with the blood-brain barrier. So I had to, and the DNA damage and cell protein by Dr. Martin Blank, and we're talking about that in the film. So I had all those scenes, and my plan was to have animations in explaining all those really scientific and medical discoveries and proof of harm, basically, because one of the first things that people tell you is that, oh, there is no proof. There is not enough scientific evidence. Well, there are. The Bioinitiative Report, and of course you have to see the movie to see that there are, but there's like over like 2,000, even more, 5,000 research that each show different harm from exposure to radio frequencies. But the interesting thing is that after we had the first rough cut of the film, that was 2.5 hours, I had a test screening with some friends that didn't know anything about exposure to radio frequencies or EMF, and frankly, who wouldn't care and couldn't care less, and knowing that that film wasn't going to change their perspective on whether they were going to use their cell phone or not. Like, I purposefully took the skeptics because I wanted to see if my efforts in proving that the science was there with the interviews from the experts, and at that time I didn't have the animation, but I had like images that we used to illustrate what we were saying, and I took a lot of animation from what's that website that has medical Khan Academy. They had great little videos that are meant to explain how those mechanisms work for medical students. So I used those as examples of how we would have an animation later. And at the end of the screening, they trashed me. They're like, we don't care. We don't want to know about the science. You've got enough. Like, just tell us two things that are important and get on with the story. Stick with the story, because that's what regular people are going to connect to. And, of course, I was crashed, because I had put, like, almost 9 months in trying to make sense of all the science and putting it on screen and editing it, and it just didn't work. And, you know, unfortunately, scientists are great as scientists. They're not actors, so they're not necessarily very engaging on camera. So that was also a challenge, like, trying to find the engaging parts and moving away from it when it wasn't engaging. And so that was a difficult selection process. But to come back to your question, it was purposefully, I don't want to say watered down, but it was simplified, because I wanted teenagers to be able to sit through that if their parents wanted them to see this documentary, because it is PG-13. I mean, you'd have to be a little bit of a geek, or have your parents tell you need to watch this, because teenagers are so into their technology. But it is understandable and it is accessible. And somebody at one point told me, you know, it's very easy to make things complicated. What's difficult is to make them simple. And it's true.
It's true. So you had to kind of pick up your ego and then get to the cutting room.
I took 2 months to recover. I stopped the editing, took this like 2-3 months, and I had run out of funds anyway. So it's I shut down the cutting room, went back to fundraising. We did a Kickstarter campaign at that point. So I was away from it for about 4 months. 4 or 5 months, and when I got the funding, I went back to it, and that was actually great, because it gave me a perspective. And when I watched it again, I was like, oh yeah, this is way too much. Who cares about that? I mean, the good thing about it is that if you want to know more, you can find more. And eventually, if we get more funding and people are interested, we have the footage, and we can have like scenes at the end of the DVD that explain what are the VGCCs or the cell protein or DNA damage. We don't have to have all that heavy science in the documentary. Otherwise, it makes it an educational documentary. And my goal was really to have a mainstream documentary about it.
And entertaining for people. So they
yes, and entertaining, yeah, because there is so many documentaries, so many videos, so many docuseries, and people's attention is getting less and less, so they need to watch 20-minute pieces. And so that's why we also broke it down in chapters, so you can actually watch a chapter at a time, like 4 chapters, I think there are, or 5, and that makes it more digestible as well.
So let's go back to the beginning, and the question I want to ask you is, what made you determine to make a film about this issue? How did that happen for you?
Interestingly enough, after I did my first narrative fiction film, which was in the Junior Cannes Film Festival and in competition at the Berlin, at the Berlin Film Festival in 2009, I believe, I stayed in the film business for a bit, and then I was done. I wanted to do something else that was easier to do when I had young kids. And I at some point I had a pinched nerve in my head, and I was a heavy cell phone user and a heavy cordless phone user. Now I'm all my phones in my house are corded, wired. And I had a pinched nerve in my head. I don't know how I got that. And every time the phone would ring when I was in the car and the phone was on the driver's seat, because at the time you didn't have those like magnets where you could like put your phone in front of you, I would get a shooting pain in my head. And I can't remember how, but somebody told me, well, cell phones are harmful. They actually emit radio frequencies. And I was one of those skeptics. I was like, oh, come on. If it was that dangerous, it wouldn't be on the market type of attitude. So I didn't stop using my cell phone except when I had that pinched nerve. And then I forgot about it. But then it came again 6 months later. We're talking 2012. And I was doing something else at the time, more energy work as a healer, and it came back, and I started researching it. And the more I researched, the more I discovered about it, and the issues of Wi-Fi was coming into play. And that was the year of the iPad rollouts in Los Angeles, 2012, I believe, or 13, maybe 13. And I was visiting middle school for my sixth grader. He was entering seventh grade, and we were visiting public and private schools in LA, and one school in particular, they all were very proud of becoming like the next generation of schools with iPads and iPads for everyone and technology for everyone. And we were visiting this private school. The guy who toured opened the classroom, and they were all sitting, and they were seventh graders. They all had an iPad and a smart board in the classroom. And I had this vision of a class in a microwave. And then now that image became an animation in the film. And I have to say, it became like, it's like one of those moments of serendipity that I had this vision, but I didn't know about Magda Havas yet. And she always uses that analogy. So I guess it was like some kind of message that I had to get in touch with her. Because after I started researching it and I saw on her website, she makes this analogy of classrooms being like microwaves for children. So she was actually the first person I interviewed. I guess the reason I decided to make the film is because when I was doing the research for myself, like for my own well-being in my house for my kids, because I was concerned with their screen time and the content of their screens, and then I discovered that the source of their screen was also an issue, and that's when I started researching it. And I would talk to my friends about it, and at the time that was pretty much the year, like a year before my son graduated from sixth grade, every kid in sixth grade were getting cell phones. And I was like, well, why would they need a cell phone at 11? Like, seriously. And then I discovered more about it. I was talking to people around me, and I felt like no one was listening to me. I was an alien to my kids, my friends. My husband felt it wasn't, it didn't apply. And it's only when I decided to make a movie about it, and not like 6 months into it, I'm talking like 2 years into it, when I had spent money, I had done a first crowdfunding campaign, I did a trailer, that's when people started seeing me as a resource and seeing that what I was onto might be something. And so now that the movie's done, I'm hoping that I think it brings credibility to the issue in my environment that, I didn't spend 4 years of my time doing this film if it was bogus, but then everybody that I've interviewed in it are important and they need to have a voice. And so I think that having experts from the U.S. and from Europe gives credibility to the film. So I was very fortunate to be able to interview everyone, but two of them really, I think, give some credibility to the film. They all do. I shouldn't say that, because they all do, but they're all from the U.S. There are two that are from Europe that were part of the World Health Organization EMF project in 2011, when the World Health Organization actually classified radio frequency radiation from your cell phone and wireless technologies as a class 2B carcinogen. And a class 2B carcinogen is like, it's probable, so they have those classifications. It's 1A is, yes, it's cancer, it gives cancer, possible. It's possible that it gives cancer, that's a 2A, and a 2B, it's probable, but they're still not, no, I'm sorry, it's the opposite, possible and probable. So that also gives a lot of credibility to the film, because those two experts who came up with this classification that is similar to lead and asbestos in the film. That, for me, was really important to go to Europe and being able to interview all those people.
Well, it's been quite a journey. And it, I mean, it, you know, as you share your story, it just came out of this awakening that we have a serious problem facing humanity at this point in time. And the most vulnerable of us, our children, our unborn children, our young children, the generations to come, are going to be most affected, most potentially harmed. I was reading recently that the genetic defects, and I love that, maybe we can talk about the they found in Iceland and how the DNA was being damaged in this generation of children didn't exist in their parents before. But what I was going to say is what we are finding is that when things are altering our DNA, which EMFs do, it can be passed on for 14 generations.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if it's 10 or 12 or 14 generations, but it is passed on. And, you know, your show is called What Women Must Know. And first, yeah, when you reached out for the interview, I was like, yes, well, women must know that when they're pregnant, they really need to be paying attention to their environment. You know, they pay attention to what they eat, what they drink, what kind of medicine they put it in their body. They get all kinds of warnings on those at the pharmacy and, you know, everywhere. But no one warns them about electromagnetic fields. And in the film, Dr. Martha Herbert and Cindy Sage actually co-wrote a paper linking EMF with autism, exposure to EMF. And actually, there is more and more and more research showing that fetuses are affected in utero by the mother's exposure to an environment that contains toxins. And so electromagnetic fields and radio frequencies are considered toxins, and pregnant women should be paying attention. They shouldn't, like, put the iPad on their belly when and connecting to the Wi-Fi, because we're all exposed. And I'm not saying not to use technology. I use technology, but it's about using it safely. So if a mom is, a pregnant mother is going to use the iPad, well, she can actually, one of the ways is not to put it on the belly or put a protective blanket over the belly, and ideally put the iPad on the table and touch it the less possible, not hold it in the head, like have it in the hands, have something holding it, because one of the advantages, I should say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but from radio frequencies, is that it decreases with distance. So the further away you are from it, the less exposed you are.
So talk about, you mentioned using a blanket, and you were telling me about a technology before we had our conversation on air that I didn't know about. Do you want to talk about one of the things you really like to suggest?
Yes. And I will suggest it because I think it's really something that women must know, pregnant women must know this, that because their fetuses is exposed to the electromagnetic fields in their environment, it's really important to either the best way is to be hardwired and reduce your environment, your exposure in your environment, like turn off your Wi-Fi at night, or I mean, the best is not to have Wi-Fi and be hardwired. I realize if you're in an apartment, it might be hard to be wired. So if you're going to use Wi-Fi, you should be very far from the router, at least like 12 to 15 feet, and not put the computer or any devices, whether it's laptop or iPad or phone, on the belly. Now, the technology what you're referring to is actually shielding fabrics, and that fabric is made of silver lining, and metal, so silver, actually block radio frequency emissions. So it's kind of like a Faraday cage. It deflects the radiation coming, so to speak, at you. So if a pregnant woman can actually have those kind of those clothing that they sell that you can put around your belly, or a blanket that you put around your belly before you use a device. However, I want to be very clear about that, is because it deflects, the person next to you actually get double exposed. So if you are pregnant and you're nursing at the same time, it's a really bad idea, because the newborn is getting exposure from his environment, his or her environment, and from the reflection from the blanket. But if you're in a work environment, I think pregnant women and newborns should be protected from this environmental hazard. And some people are offended by what I say, but I'd rather protect them and have a child that doesn't have any behavioral or cognitive issues because of his/her exposure in utero, than having to have a child that has to live with that the rest of his life because he was overexposed in utero. And adults around that working mom can handle it if they're not electro-hypersensitive, because that's another issue. Some people, more and more actually, some people are developing what's called electro-hypersensitivity, and they're very, very sensitive to their environment. I mean, there's the family in my film. The gentleman used to be able to feel if somebody was calling in a room, if somebody had a cell phone on in a room where he was in, he could feel a text. And so some people are extremely sensitive to that, and more developing sensitivities. So there are some shielding products. Many, like their shielding paint. If you have a cell phone tower outside your bedroom window, you might want to put some shielding curtains or shielding paint, but know that whatever you use inside can't go out. So nothing can come in, but nothing can go out. So you might be actually in a microwave oven. So, shielding is great, but it needs to be done with a professional.
So,
I mean to say this too. Sorry to interrupt. Like that same baby blanket, Belly Armor, it's the company who makes them. They have baby blankets for newborns, and they have little hats for newborns that actually protect their brain from exposure, because the brain is the most sensitive organ.
Well, I mean, that sounds like really great technology for people to know about. And I also want to say that what I have researched is that women who are exposed, we're not even talking about pregnant women, just women, when they use their phones, when they use their devices, it can actually go in and damage the DNA of their eggs. So that can lead to more infertility issues or birth defects. So it's pretty scary. You know, this is I call it the greatest public health disaster that no one knows about, Sabine, because it's really been kept from us. And to this day, it's being kept, the truth about how dangerous this is being kept from us. So that's why your work is so, you're a revolutionary, really.
Thank you. And you know, it's like the tobacco industry or asbestos before tobacco. Eventually, people will know about it, and I hope that this film is one of the catalysts that is going to help bring that awareness for people. Because yeah, women must know. And actually, I keep coming back to the title of your podcast and website because I love it so much. One of the thing, if I may jump for a second, to another subject matter, it's breast cancer. The breast cancer in young women is skyrocketing today. So yes, there is environmental factors. Yes, there is toxins. Yes, we don't have the clean water, and we don't all have access to organic food products. But there's another factor, and it's that teenagers put their phones in their bra when they go jogging, when they go out, and they don't want to carry a purse. And there is more and more women who have breast cancer earlier and earlier because of that. And that's we are almost at the end of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and that's been one of our campaign on social media, is bringing awareness to young men and women: don't put your cell phone in your bra.
You don't know this, Sabine, but I actually wrote a book called "What Mothers Don't Let Your Daughters Get Breast Cancer," and basically, it was looking at the growing incidence of breast cancer in women under the age of 40. But I was interviewing teenagers and 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds who are developing breast cancer. So breast cancer is a, in the younger population, is unfortunately a growing trend, a growing demographic. And that was before I even knew about the EMF. So when you add this toxin, and I think it's really important what you said, I want to emphasize, and that is the exposure from your Wi-Fi devices, the microwave radiation that's emitted from these devices actually is a toxin. But it's not just another toxin. It's a toxin that is the prime toxin that accentuates and aggravates and intensifies all the other toxic exposures that we have. So it amplifies them many times over, breaking down our blood-brain barrier. So letting all the chemical toxins that we already have circulating through our body, now they have easier access into the brain. So it's such a primary toxin that just makes everything worse, including it makes viruses and bacteria more virulent. So they become more of a problem if we are, you know, exposed to an infection of some sort. So, yes, it's a really big wake-up call to understand all of the ramifications of what's going on. I want us to move to the schools and to children, because I know that's been one of the issues that started you on this path. So, can you share with us the things you were learning through your documentary about what's going on, how the Wi-Fi, how the smart schools are affecting our children?
Yeah, that was the primary reason why I made this film, because I wanted my kids to become aware of their environment. And actually, it's a double-edged sword, because my 16-year-old has a cell phone now, and my other two younger kids don't have a cell phone. One is 14 and one is 12. But sometimes I need to reach a 16-year-old and I can't reach him, and he goes, "But mom, you told me to keep it off if I don't need it." So now it's hard for me to get a hold of him. But
how do you get a 14-year-old not to harass you to craziness for not having a phone?
Oh, it's been very difficult, and I think that the movie has helped a lot, because it has given me credibility with my kids too. And the first thing, talking about Wi-Fi in school, he was harassing me, and in his school there was a teacher that was electrosensitive. And so at the orientation meeting at the first week of the school year, she had all the parents, and she said, "Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm taking away your children's cell phone. I'm having them put them turn off their cell phones and put them in that shoe rack there that you see. And when they leave the room, they can take their cell phones and turn them back on again, but I cannot function with the cell phones on in the room." And she didn't give any explanation. And so I emailed her and said, wow, thank you. You must be electrosensitive, and I really appreciate you doing this for our kids. I wish all teachers would do that. I'm actually making a documentary about that. And that was 2 years ago, 3 years ago already. And she said, well, why don't you come during Science Week and do a presentation on what are radio frequencies, because they're actually radiations in the microwave range. And so I did a one-hour presentation to the kids in school about what radiations were and how they affected the body, and talked about the blood-brain barrier and why it was important for them not to sleep with their cell phone under their pillows, how the blue light affected their melatonin secretions, and why they shouldn't put the cell phone in their bra. And there were ninth graders and 10th graders, and that actually blew me away. And at that point, it was a bit difficult with the film, and it re-energized me, because I saw that they listened, they cared, and when they would see me in the schoolyard months later, even to this day, sometimes they say, "See, I don't have my phone on; it's on airplane mode because I don't need it in the classroom." And that, just like 80 kids have listened, and out of the maybe these 80, maybe 40 are doing something about it. I don't know, but that's my statistics. But it has affected them, and it has, they listened. And I think that because the other kids listened, my kids also listened, and they realized I was onto something. So he harasses me sometimes, but he has an iPod. I know he uses Wi-Fi, but at least... with his iPod, but at least I'm minimizing exposure by him not having a cell phone, because that's even worse than to have the cell phone and the Wi-Fi on. And I'm not against technology. I realized that at that age, if I ask them to not be on the group text with their friends, they would miss out socially. Like this... I mean, that's another, you know, is the whole psychological issue. I have, like, George Carlos say a line about it, and I would make a whole movie about it, but Screenagers came out already when I was making the film, so I didn't go there, of how they are socially impacted and their behaviors are, I guess, modifying. They can't really read social cues anymore, it seems like, because they're so addicted to their devices. And so not allowing them to be part of that social network with their friends would make them weird. And if they feel weird, then they're not going to listen to me, and they're not going to understand what's happening. So I have limits, like my 14-year-old and my 12-year-old, they don't have a phone. That limits their exposures. We turn off the Wi-Fi at night. They come home, they have an hour that they can check their text, and they respond to everything, but then at a certain hour, I ask them to put them away. And it is a policing job, because it doesn't always last, and sometimes I forget, and then I realize, ooh, how did that iPod sneak back in the room after 9 p.m.? Okay, so I start my policing again for like 2 weeks, and then they keep up for 3 weeks, and then I start again. It's keeping on it and having a dialogue about the harmful effects from exposure. I realize it's easier for me than another parent, because I'm the filmmaker. So they've seen me doing it. They've heard lines from experts. They've seen people talk to me about it. So they're overexposed to the issue, I would say. But having done two school trainings, I mean, school talks, and seeing how teenagers responded to my talk, I think they're already to listen if parents want to do the changes themselves. Because a lot of parents are on the cell phones themselves. They are the ones who don't believe that cell phones are harmful. Otherwise, if they knew that the device that they give to their children is as harmful as drinking and driving, they wouldn't, right?
You would hope not.
Yeah.
And I think, that takes us back to why this is such a challenging topic to educate people about, because our lives have become so entwined with this technology, we can't imagine existing without it. And, when I started researching it, teenagers didn't even use their cell phone because it was too expensive. And now, like with what you're finding, 10-year-olds, most 10-year-olds have their own phone, have their own smartphone now. So, we're seeing it just centering into lower and lower age groups. And then I always get horrified when I see, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds being given the phone for entertainment's sake, distraction's sake, or to be talking on the phone, or if their parents are holding them while talking on the phone. So, using that metaphor of these frogs cooking nice and slowly before they realize they're totally cooked, I think that's where we are at, which is why we need to do some important things to protect ourselves. So a couple of things before we come to the end of our conversation. I want to ask you two things. First of all, what are your recommendations for people to do in the protection from this microwave radiation exposure, which is actually going down to damage our DNA. It causes mass. I just want to, without belaboring the point, but the studies, and Dr. Martin Paul has been a guest on my show twice now, and I love the work he's doing about how it is proven that these technologies are actually causing massive oxidative stress. And oxidative stress and free radical damage exacerbates inflammation, and all chronic illnesses are caused by free radical damage and inflammation. So it's the unseen factor that is driving an epidemic of chronic illnesses right now. So what are your favorite solutions?
Know your exposure and know where it's coming from and what to do about it. I travel to show the film, to visit family, and I know that as soon as I step out of my house that has very low exposures compared to somewhere else, I know I'm getting exposed. But that doesn't prevent me from going out. What I do is that I still go out. I try to keep my cell phone away from me. Like I never wear it in my pocket. If I do, it's because I'm concerned about my kids and I want to be reached, so I do have my cell phone, but it's always in a bag on the passenger seat or in the back, and I never put the cell phone to my ear. Actually, it hurts my ear. I speak on speakerphone, and I know the argument is, well, you're still holding the phone. I'm like, yeah, I'm still holding the phone, so it still is affecting my hand. Actually, I know I've held my phone too long or I've texted too much when my hand hurts. So I try to minimize that. What I found the most effective and actually brilliant is that all the apps are available on the computer. So I have a hardwired desktop computer on which I have my iMessaging, so I text from my computer when I'm at work. I don't need my phone. I use call forwarding, so all my calls that go to my cell phone actually ring on my landline, and I'm speaking right now on a corded phone. And actually, you mentioned Dr. McCullough. That's funny because I was telling him about my, so to speak, work ethics. I use Skype from the computer. I use WhatsApp, the app, from the computer most of the time. The iMessaging from the computer instead of from the phone. But it makes me very connected, but not from my phone. And he thought it was a brilliant idea. He's like, oh, I've got to use Skype. Instead of using Skype from my phone, I can use it from my computer. I was like, yeah. And so that's like the best way to do it. And of course, I mean, I always forget that one because it's such a given. Don't sleep with a cell phone on your nightstand. You know, my cell phone is like in my kitchen and like not miles away, but very far away from the bedrooms. And actually, I recently started putting my cell phones on airplane mode, even if they're like in four rooms away from my bedroom, like on the second story, because I feel that the phone is still connecting at night. It's still getting my messages or updates every now and then. And why should I even have that connection from cell phones around me? What else do I do? Oh, I recently found out, actually, from Jeremy Johnson that Epsom salt baths help detoxifying when you've been overexposed and you want to clear out your surcharge of, I guess, body voltage and all that. You can use do an Epsom salt bath. That helps. And turning off the Wi-Fi at night, ideally being hardwired as much as possible. Those are the things I do.
Which are, you know, strategies we have to start introducing into our lifestyle, you know, and wake up.
Probably, I mean, there's a choice of we can live in nature somewhere and not being connected. But if you want to be part of society and be connected, then yeah, we need to include that in our lifestyle.
Yeah, and keeping. I mean, we can go on for another hour talking about all the things we can do and how to stay healthy and how to, you know, deal with the free radical damage and the deficiencies that make electrosensitivity more acute for people. But it's a big topic, and I just want people to start waking up to the fact that we have a problem and we need to start looking after ourselves. I wanted to ask you one more thing because we're coming to the end. Can you please guide people where they can see Generation Zapped, how they can bring it into their communities, how they can watch it either online? But I would like people to take on the mission and have a showing in their community for a small group or a large group or whatever. So can you talk about that, Sabine?
Yeah, so do I. I'd love that. So if you go to the website, www.generationzapped.com, you can actually click a button and to host a screening, or you can find the screenings near you. And basically, we have a screening manager. People can contact her to find out what type of screening is most appropriate for them, if they want to do a home screening for up to 15 people, or if they want to do a community screening at their library, and that gives them the licensing rights to actually sell tickets. And so, and they can, there's events around the world. We have some in England, some in Australia, in the US. And the reason we're making this film available for community screenings only at the moment, or home screenings only, is because we want people to engage as a community. There is so much information out there about just everything that when you take on a cause on yourself, you just don't necessarily make the changes one needs to make. And it's not an easy film. I mean, it is mainstream, but it's a film that is best to see with other people so you can actually have a dialogue of what kind of steps one can take to reduce your exposure and actually do something about it. So it will be available on VOD in spring 2018, but right now it's off of the website, and we encourage people to have community screenings to show it. We have a lot of parent association asking for the film to show it in schools because there is 20 minutes on Wi-Fi in schools and some safety guidelines that people can apply in their own school system.
Well, that's wonderful, and I really as well plan to have a showing here where I am.
Oh, so fantastic.
Yeah, I'm getting
a
group
you.
Of people together so we can rally the troops and hopefully have a big showing here. And I think it's an important message. Obviously, it's something that I have been on my soapbox about for a long time. So you've created the most amazing educational documentary that really helps to put the problem and the issue out there so people understand it's a real problem and there are real valid solutions as well to help us get through our Wi-Fi world. So, you know, it's a great, great service you're doing for humanity, Sabine, and I want to thank you for all the hard work and tremendous amount of energy and commitment and learning that you had to go through to make possible. And I am very grateful to you and your team for making that so. I just want to say that your one of your producers, Peter Sullivan, was also a guest on my radio show. I've been doing my best to help people really understand from so many different perspectives that we have a serious problem. We can't just pretend it's not there, and we need to be proactive for the sake of ourselves and for the sake of our children and our future generations. So you are really helping to make such a difference with this really serious problem. So I want to personally thank you, and I'm sure so many people thank you as well for the wonderful work you have done.
Thank you so much for having me on the show and raising awareness by having people like Peter and George Carlo. I don't know if you've interviewed him, but thank you for committing to raising awareness on this issue.
Well, you're very welcome. And I want to just thank all my listeners for being here today and listening and taking this on board. Go check out the trailer, at least, Generations Apps. If you can get a group of people, organize a showing, it will make such a difference. You're saving lives. So, Sabine, thank you so much. I want to thank you for being here. We've been having this conversation with documentary maker Sabine El-Jemael. And until next time, everyone, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.